This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Material is selected with the interest of its audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. I'm Steph Donov, welcoming you to Everyday Health, an Audio Journal program in which we share information about healthy living. This broadcast is for informational purposes only, and suggestions should always be discussed with your healthcare providers. Today we'll be focusing on your gut. We will start with heartburn, move on to indigestion, then talk a bit about the plants we eat, and end up with the way that maybe too many meals seem to end with burps and farts. But we'll start with heartburn. We all know what heartburn feels like, that painful burning feeling in the middle of your chest. Well, here's what the Cleveland Clinic has to say about it. The first thing is, it has nothing to do with your heart, nor is it even in your heart. It is caused by stomach acid rising into your esophagus, which runs through your chest close to your heart. We all get heartburn occasionally, but for some people it becomes a chronic condition, and it's a lot of people, roughly 20% of the United States. That condition is called GERD, G-E-R-D, and it stands for gastroesophageal reflux disease. And since it is a long and complicated word, we'll just call it GERD for the rest of the story. It all starts in your esophagus, that swallowing tube that begins at your throat, travels down through the middle of your chest to reach your stomach. Heartburn begins in this tube, but the feeling often radiates throughout your chest and sometimes into your throat. It is a burning sensation that can be mild or severe. Some people think they should lie down when they have heartburn. Please don't. It's worse when you lie down or bending over. And it is more likely to strike if you have had a late dinner or a rich, acidic, or spicy one. Heartburn may last anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours, but it should go away when the last meal you ate has passed out of your stomach. Once your stomach has emptied its contents, there is nothing left to burn. But how long does it take to get there? 2 to 5 hours is the rule. There are other symptoms of heartburn, and it may be hard to tell the difference between heartburn and other types of chest pain. If you're unsure about the type of pain you're feeling, it is always a good idea to discuss it with your healthcare provider. It may also help you focus on other symptoms that you might have with it. These accompanying symptoms can help you distinguish heartburn from a heart attack or other esophageal disorders. The other symptoms include burping, a sour taste in your mouth, nausea, and throwing up. Some of the less typical symptoms of GERD include stomach bloating and overfullness, hiccups, chronic cough, worsening asthma, sore throat, laryngitis, difficulty swallowing or feeling like there's a lump in your throat, and chest pain similar to angina, in other words, a non-cardiac chest pain. Let's take a closer look at exactly how GERD strikes. It's when stomach juices, including acids and enzymes, backwash into your esophagus. Your stomach has a thick mucus lining that protects it from these substances, but your esophagus does not. A valve at the bottom of your esophagus, called the lower esophageal sphincter, is supposed to keep stomach contents from coming back up, but sometimes it's weak or doesn't close all the way. Different things can cause your lower esophageal sphincter to weaken or to relax, such as inhaling smoke, extra abdominal pressure from your body weight, tight clothing, or pregnancy, a hiatal hernia when your stomach pushes up through your diaphragm, a heavy meal that stretches your stomach and stays in it longer, indigestion and gas when gas bubbles rise up through your gastrointestinal tract, also called the GI tract, lying down too soon after eating, certain foods, including coffee, chocolate, citrus fruits, mint, and tomato sauce. Certain medications, including birth control pills and blood pressure medications, or a combination of any and all of them. And don't forget that this all applies to both GERD, which is chronic heartburn, and the occasional heartburn you might feel. Now, if heartburn is relatively new to you, and you haven't recently changed your diet or lifestyle or medications, you may be getting it for other reasons that could develop gradually over time. Here are some examples. Aging. Heartburn may develop or worsen as you age because your muscles weaken, including your lower esophageal sphincter. Weight gain. Most people gain weight gradually, but symptoms of weight gain, like heartburn, can appear suddenly when you reach a certain threshold. Medications. If you've recently changed or added new medications, ask your healthcare provider if they could be the cause. Now, heartburn is usually a disorder of the esophagus with acid reflux as the most likely cause, but there are a few other conditions that can cause the same sensation. First, esophageal ulcers. Ulcers are sores caused by erosion of the lining in your GI tract. They can cause a telltale burning kind of pain. Ulcers in your esophagus are much less common than in the stomach or intestines, but when they do occur, it is usually due to acid reflux. But reflux isn't the only possible cause. Overusing NSAIDs, NSAIDs, like aspirin and ibuprofen, can also cause ulcers. Esophagitis. That's a severe inflammation in your esophagus, and it may cause a burning sensation, too. Now, a logical question at this point is heartburn serious? Now, occasional heartburn is uncomfortable, but it won't do any real damage. In fact, some amount of acid reflux is normal, and most people don't even feel it. If you are feeling it, you may be getting more acid reflux than your esophagus can tolerate. If this happens occasionally, it's a minor wound that can heal quickly. If it happens regularly, though, your esophagus lining may not have enough time to heal in between. When your esophagus lining is consistently injured, it could lead to long-term complications, such as esophageal strictures. In other words, scar tissue. Since the esophagus is simply a long tube, scarring will cause your esophagus to narrow, to stricture, and this can lead to swallowing problems and food getting stuck in your esophagus. The acid reflux that causes heartburn may also indicate other hidden problems in your digestive system. For example, you may have too much acid in your stomach, which can cause complications like gastritis and stomach ulcers. Acid reflux may also aggravate your asthma or other chronic respiratory conditions, and if the reflux rises into your throat, it can cause swelling and lead to ulcers and growths there. Now, there are numerous over-the-counter treatments for heartburn, but if you decide you need to go to your healthcare professional, that's fine too. Describe what you are going through and how often it happens, and they will know what to do, and whether or not you need to see a gastroenterologist. The main thing to remember is that heartburn is treatable. In the best-case scenario, you may be able to manage it by making some diet and lifestyle adjustments and keeping some antacid tadney for occasional use. If you need them, long-term prescription medications are also very effective for acid reflux. Medication is available, but what are the lifestyle changes you should make? Eat smaller meals throughout the day. With less to digest, your stomach will produce less acid. Loosen your waistline. Abdominal pressure contributes to reflux. Weight loss could also help. Do not go to bed with a full stomach. Wait 3 to 5 hours before lying down. Sleep on your left side. This positions your lower esophageal sphincter in an air pocket above your stomach contents. Lying on your back or on your right side submerges the valve. Avoid trigger foods. Pay attention to which foods and drink make your heartburn worse, and quit smoking. Heartburn is just one of the many reasons to quit smoking, and it is a good one. So far, we've talked about what causes it, what it actually is, the over-the-counter medications you could take, and the lifestyle changes you could make, and what it can turn into. So how do you determine if and when it is time to see your own health care provider? Well, here's some reasons to do just that. One, you have heartburn on a weekly basis. Two, you have atypical symptoms, the unusual ones. Three, you have difficulty swallowing or getting enough calories. Four, you are over the age of 60. And five, if and when what you are doing to fight heartburn no longer works. And here's a note from Cleveland Clinic. Occasional heartburn is common, and most people could manage it with small adjustments. But if you have it all the time, you may need medical care. Do not leave chronic heartburn untreated. Pain in your esophagus usually means it is being injured, and that could do real damage over time. And the best place to go to stop that damage is your healthcare provider. But enough about heartburn. Let's talk about another very common problem, indigestion, also known as dyspepsia. And here's what Johns Hopkins has to say about it. As you know, it's a pain, a general discomfort or burning feeling in your abdomen. That's the upper belly, by the way. As I said, indigestion is not the same as heartburn. Heartburn happens when stomach acid goes out of your stomach and back into your esophagus. But indigestion may be linked to stomach acid, so you can wind up with both indigestion and heartburn at the same time. But there are many other factors that can cause or aggravate indigestion. Here are the top 10. We'll start with health problems like sores or ulcers in your stomach or small intestine, redness and swelling or inflammation of your stomach, also known as gastritis, acid flowing through your stomach into the esophagus, that's heartburn or GERD, bacterial infections in your stomach, inflammation of your gallbladder, gallstones, pancreatitis, food moving too slowly out of your stomach, lactose, gluten, and other intolerances, and number 10, irritable bowel syndrome. Certain medications can also cause indigestions. Bacteria-fighting medicines such as antibiotics, aspirin, and over-the-counter pain and fever medicines, the NSAIDs, NSAIDs. Some medicines that treat osteoporosis, and certain medicines such as iron and potassium tablets. The way you live, work, and play can also cause indigestion. We're talking about lifestyle issues such as smoking, drinking too much caffeine, drinking too much alcohol, eating too fast, eating too much, eating spicy, fatty, or greasy foods, eating too many high-fiber foods. Even stress can cause indigestion, like when you are stressing out over indigestion. By the way, don't be too stressed out or depressed. We will talk about what you can do to prevent it in just a few minutes. In the same way that there are many things that cause indigestions, there are many symptoms of it as well. And each person's symptoms may vary. Here are some of the ones they include. Feeling too full after eating. Feeling pain, burning, and discomfort in your upper belly, your abdomen. Feeling bloated. Burping and loud stomach gurgling. Having an upset stomach or vomiting. Having diarrhea. Having gas. The symptoms of the indigestion may look like other health problems, so always see your health care providers to be sure. And here is when to call your doctor. Because of frequent vomiting, blood in vomit, weight loss or not feeling hungry, bloody, black, or tarry stool, sharp pain in your belly or your abdomen, sweating, pain that spreads to your neck or arms or jaw, difficulty or painful swallowing, yellow coloring of your eyes or skin, showing jaundice, or if this has been going on for 2 weeks. They will look at your health history and give you a physical exam to make sure there are no other problems causing your indigestion or what you think might be indigestion. You may have to take some tests. Once you know that the problem is indigestion and nothing more serious, there is a lot you can do yourself to treat or even prevent indigestion. First thing is, avoid foods or medicine that causes indigestion. It is also helpful to stay away from stressful situations. Try eating several small meals a day, small low-fat meals, instead of 3 large meals. Eat more slowly and enjoy your meals. When you eat more slowly, your stomach has more time to digest the food. Limit the spicy, fatty, greasy, and high-fiber foods. Chew your foods well. This is where the digestion process starts. Stop, or at least limit, the amount of coffee, soda, or alcohol you drink with your meals. Don't use medicines that may trigger indigestion unless they are medically required. These include aspirin and over-the-counter pain and fever medications. Other lifestyle changes that may keep indigestion from happening include quitting smoking, getting enough rest, finding ways to lower your emotional and physical stress, such as meditation or yoga, exercising before a meal or waiting at least 1 hour after eating before exercising, and pay attention to how much alcohol you drink. It does make a difference. Is it true that we should eat 30 different plants a week? And no, I'm not talking about roses and gardenias and mums and philodendrons. I'm talking about fruits and vegetable-type plants. Well, a growing supplement market may be trying to capitalize on this claim. But the truth is, we still don't know what a truly healthy gut microbiome really looks like. Here's what Kate Lloyd of The Guardian has to say about it. The idea comes from a 2018 study involving more than 10,000 people in the U.S., U.K., and Australia. Participants submitted stool samples and reported what they typically ate. Researchers analyzed the microbes in these samples and found that people who consumed more than 30 different plant foods a week tended to have a more diverse gut microbiome than those who ate fewer than 10. But that doesn't mean 30 is a magic number. Whether you eat 25 plants a week or 30 is probably less important than some would have you believe. And the some who would have you believe that are the companies making the supplements. Kate spoke to Professor Daniel M. Davis, the head of science at Imperial College London and the author of Immune Health, a Myth-Busting Guide. Davis said that this is a pretty arbitrary number. It's not as though the research compared 10 plants, 20 plants, 30 plants, and 35 plants and found a clear-cut winner. Nor does the study prove that eating 30 plants a week directly improves health. While a more diverse microbiome has been linked to a lower risk of some diseases, scientists still don't know exactly what a healthy microbiome looks like. People eating more than 30 plants a week are probably doing a gazillion other things differently as well. Exercise, sleep, and stress also affect our microbiome, and with our complex lives, it's hard to work out the importance of each of these alone. Is it true that having a diverse microbiome stops you from getting sick? Davis said we should be particularly wary of people using the 30 plants message to make money. The idea has fueled a market for expensive supplements that promise to help people hit the target, but there's little independent evidence that says they work. It hasn't been proven that reaching 30 plants a week will prevent illness or lead to a specific health benefit. What we do know is that eating a variety of fruits, vegetables, legumes, nuts, and whole grains is generally good for you. And what more could you ask from a good meal? Do you want to make a kid giggle? Just burp or fart around them. Even saying the words can sometimes get them going. Now, adults usually get shy when they get burpy or farty and will pretend that it never happened or that someone else is to blame. But there are times when they cannot be ignored, and we've all been there as both the burper or the farter, or the listener, or at times the smeller. So let's start off with the difference between a burp and a fart. See, your body takes in gas from two different places. First, there's the air you breathe. When you breathe, when you gulp your food, when you drink carbonated beverages, even when you chew gum, according to the people at WebMD, your body takes in oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon dioxide. That is gas, and most of it you belch. But if you don't belch it, it can go down into your digestive system. Now, when you eat, you digest and absorb nutrients from food. What's left over is also gas, and that gas mixes with the gas you didn't burp and turns into farts. Now, most of the gas we produce is odorless, but there are certain types of foods that are not. For instance, those that contain sulfur can make it smelly. Some bacteria also makes methane or hydrogen sulfide that could add a distinctive flavor. Do you remember that grade school rhyme? Beans, beans, the tropical fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot. Well, the rhyme is right. Some foods, including beans, tend to cause gas because our bodies are not well equipped to digest them. And these foods include beans and lentils, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, and onions, whole grain foods such as cereals, breads, and crackers, sugars found in fruit and juices, but also processed foods containing high fructose corn syrup, sugars and some artificial sweeteners found in diet drinks and foods. Sorbitol is super gassy and is found in both. You can also get gassy if you can't tolerate certain things in your diet, such as lactose and dairy products. Fruits, veggies, and whole grains are great for you, too, so you should always still eat them, just notice if they affect you. It turns out that most people burp or fart 10 to 20 times a day, some people even more. A lot of people who go to their providers complaining that they are producing too much gas, well, it turns out they are not. Some people just fart more often, but not necessarily because they are producing more gas. While men and women tend to burp and fart about the same, more women than men tend to go to their doctors and talk about it. As a rule, intestinal gas is not dangerous, even if you hold it in. But if you pass gas 50 times a day and also have other symptoms such as severe abdominal pain, bloating or blood or fat in your stool, you may need to see a doctor. So even though you don't need to see a doctor, would you like some advice because farting makes you physically or socially uneasy? Well, here's what the experts at WebMD have to say. Chew less gum. Eat slowly. Avoid carbonated drinks. Limit artificial sweeteners. Eat less broccoli, beans, and cabbage. Limit dairy, especially if you are lactose intolerant. And exercise may help. There is no cure-all medicine, but some over-the-counter meds can help. Things like Beano is an enzyme that breaks down sugars found in vegetables and grain. Lactaid and Shirolac for those who have problems with dairy, and Gas-X, Mitab, and Phazeme help break down gas bubbles in the gut. Now, this is not WebMD talking. This is me with a little poem my mother's taught me years and years ago. A burp is just a bit of wind forced upward from the heart. It's when it takes a downward path that it's called a fart. Thank you for joining us today for Everyday Health. Our broadcast is for informational purposes only, and as I said at the start of the show, I am not a health professional. So please remember that you should always talk to your own healthcare providers when considering either starting or stopping doing something that could impact on your health or healthy living. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Thank you again for listening, and we wish you health every day. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of the program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Steph Donoff. Thanks for listening, and be good to yourself.
And now, Medical Myths and Facts with Dr. Richard Curtis.
Most people think of autoimmune diseases as uncommon illnesses, but together they affect an estimated 8 to 10% of the population. What's especially striking is that about 80% of people with autoimmune diseases are women. Now, why is that? The answer lies in a combination of hormones, genetics, and the immune system itself. Women generally have stronger immune responses than men. That's an advantage when fighting infections, and may partly explain why women often respond better to vaccines. But there's a downside. A more active immune system is also more likely to mistakenly attack the body's own tissues, leading to autoimmune disease. Now, hormones play a major role as well. Estrogen enhances many immune responses, while testosterone tends to dampen them. This helps explain why diseases such as lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, autoimmune thyroid disease, and Sjögren's syndrome are much more common in women. Hormonal changes during pregnancy, after childbirth, and around menopause can also influence disease activity. For example, rheumatoid arthritis often improves during pregnancy, but may flare after delivery, while lupus can behave differently. Genetics also matter. Women have two X chromosomes, and the X chromosome contains many genes involved in regulating the immune system. Normally, one X chromosome is largely switched off in each cell, but some immune-related genes escape this process. The result may be increased immune activity, contributing to the higher risk of autoimmunity. Researchers are also learning that environmental factors interact with this genetic susceptibility. Viral infections, smoking, certain medications, obesity, stress, and changes in the gut microbiome may all trigger autoimmune disease in people who are genetically predisposed. Now, what symptoms should raise concern? Persistent fatigue, unexplained joint pain or swelling, rashes, dry eyes or mouth, muscle weakness, numbness, recurring fevers, or unexplained weight changes should prompt a discussion with a healthcare professional. Many autoimmune diseases are treatable, and outcomes are often much better when they're diagnosed early. The good news is that treatment has advanced dramatically. New biologic therapies, targeted immune-modulating medications, and earlier diagnosis are helping many people lead active, productive lives despite having autoimmune disease. The bottom line is this: women have a more vigilant immune system, which offers important protection against infection, but also increases the risk that the immune system may mistakenly attack the body itself. Understanding this heightened risk can lead to earlier recognition, earlier treatment, and better long-term health.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.